Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. Water is essential for human life. Our society's ability to bring potable water conveniently into our homes has been transformational in our battle against infectious diseases and made all of our lives much more sanitary. City water is nothing short of miraculous, and yet it's so everyday to us that we take it for granted. In the last two decades, though, beverage companies have done a good job convincing us that bottled water is somehow better for us. More filtered, more pure than the good old stuff we get from the kitchen tap. Bottled water is a multi-billion dollar industry. Young people have become acclimated to the taste, which means another generation may be hooked on bottled water. More concerning, perhaps, is the enormous use of plastic in the bottling process that winds up filling our landfills and sullying our waterways. My guest today, Noah Roberts, is concerned about our overabundance of plastic and what he considers our false exaltation of bottled water over tap. He just started a company, aptly named The Water Company, to educate us about the costs of bottled water, currently retailing for $13 per gallon. Compare that to a gallon of gasoline, and the societal cost of too much plastic. The Water Company is a tenant in Tulsa's Box Yard, a small shopping center downtown at 3rd Street in Frankfort, made from converted shipping containers, another example of creative reuse. I recently heard Roberts give a talk at the Ignite Tulsa event, where speakers had 5 minutes to educate and entertain the audience. Roberts did just that, as I'm sure you'll appreciate in our interview. Noah Roberts, founder and owner of The Water Company, is my guest today on Studio Tulsa Medical Monday. Noah Roberts, thank you so much for joining us. Let's start by telling us just what The Water Company is.
You bet. I started a business and launched it in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to essentially see if I could get an entire city off plastic water bottles.
Why?
We're kind of swimming in all this research and data that shows that the amount of plastic that's being produced is absolutely wrecking our environment and obviously having some adverse health effects as well. But I got the idea working for one of the greatest vintners in the wine industry, a guy named Don Chapelet and his wife Molly, and I realized living out there that they'll fight over a drop of water. Water is life.
This is California?
Napa Valley, yeah, Santa Elena, California. Living and working out there for a year and then coming back to Oklahoma, I couldn't see water the same way. And in a positive way, I realized that Tulsa's actually ahead of the nation. And this sounds really negative, but, you know, we've got this reputation of being great in all the bad things and bad in all the good things. We usually get a lot of flack in terms of Oklahoma. And here was a thing that I thought Tulsa, in terms of water conservation, was maybe 20 or 30 years ahead of what a lot of the cities in America were dealing with. So I realized if we could come up with the right message for this younger generation, we might actually be able to start a trend that goes nationwide.
How are we ahead in Tulsa in terms of water conservation?
National Academies of Science and others have done research on like mass migration and population studies and things like that. And what they found was that over the next 50 years, millions of people will relocate from the West Coast to places like Northeast Oklahoma, Missouri, Kansas, just because of water. There's large cities like Los Angeles that have single points that are, if they're ever affected by anything negative, it affects 20 million people. Tulsa, we have five different ways to get reliable sources of water to about a million people. So the question is, can we keep those water sources clean and pure? Starting kind of big picture, you think about less than 1% of water on the planet is even drinkable. 70% of that 1% ends up going to agriculture and industry. So we've got this tiny drop of water that we've got 7 billion people fighting over, and we happen to live in a space that it's available, it's accessible. The question is, can you keep it clean? Can you keep it safe for future generations?
So you mentioned plastic as a problem. Let's look at some of that. So I think I heard you do a talk where, first of all, I was astonished. I guess I'd never really thought about it because I will admit I have bought bottled water. I've been handed bottled water. Anytime I go to speak somewhere, it's de rigueur. They hand you a bottle of water. You know, you don't want your speaker to be parched.
Right.
And you pointed out, I think, that it's $13 per gallon, something that we can just get out of the tap for a negligible amount. I mean, we pay, homeowner, you pay, but it feels like a free resource almost.
Correct. When you walk into your favorite convenience store and you buy a single bottle of plastic bottle of water, on average, it's about $13 a gallon. You don't care because you're spending $2 or $3 for this bottle. You're thirsty, you drink it. When you break that down, that's six times the price of gas today.
Unbelievable.
And half of that bottled water comes from filtered city water anyway. So I think Coke and Pepsi and a lot of these huge bottling companies, they've got lots of ways to make money. They don't have to make billions of dollars on this. People should bottle their own water. So yes, coming back from California and coming back to Oklahoma, the first thing that hit me was if people could get over the idea of buying plastic packaged water, you know, this would work. Turns out it's pretty hard to change people's behavior. If you're conditioned to drinking plastic water bottles, you're not going to go to tap, and in a lot of times you're going to say that it's too expensive to come up with some filtration for your home or your office or your school, whatever. So I spent a couple years looking at really simple, safe, affordable options for filtering your own water. So if you have access to reusable bottles and you have access to affordable filtered water, you're much less likely to keep going in and buying those plastic water bottles.
So is it younger folks, millennials, who are more interested and more receptive to your message of conservation, not wanting to waste more plastic?
Yes. So over the last 5 months since we've launched our business, I'd say 80% of our sales are 18 to 24-year-olds. They have a smartphone. They have a reusable bottle. Like I said, they're conditioned to drinking bottled water. So the idea of not buying any more plastic water bottles or using them when people give them to them, they've got to make a decision. You know, one, can I afford to filter my own water? And then two, you know, is this something that's easy for me? It doesn't make me change my behavior, my routines. So we've got this one bottle, for example, called Grail, super cool company. It's typically used by people who hunt and fish and go out camping and so forth, where they can take river water, lake water, and then like a French press, force it through a carbon block filter and get 99.99 pure water. Most of the people that buy those bottles in our shop are college age and young professional people who don't want to spend $200 on a filter. So they'll spend $65 on a bottle and filter their water one bottle at a time. So this is a classic situation where consumers are outthinking the problem. I'm just trying to find solutions that are really easy for them to adopt and spread. So yeah, I'm very much focused on that younger demographic.
And so your store, the water company, sells bottles of different kinds, metal and glass?
Stainless steel, glass. We do even have a few plastic bottles that are high quality, BPA-free, bottles that you could use for at least 5 years. You literally could save thousands of bottles if you just kept using that, some of these high quality bottles. But yeah, we sell reusable bottles, reusable cups, reusable straws, and then water filtration systems. So home, work, school, church, anywhere you have a lot of people drinking out of a lot of plastic cups or buying or consuming lots of plastic bottles.
So how do there's a number, it sounds like, of filtering systems, but you have them even for like the individual bottle, essentially.
Correct.
You mentioned this one.
Correct. We sell really three systems. One of these companies has been around forever. It started in England, and then it's been in the United States, I think, 40 years, called Berkey. Typically, it was like really hip, cool, environmentally savvy people who have this beautiful stainless steel thing sitting on their counter. It looks kind of like a fancy coffee machine. It's a slow drip carbon block system. So you pour a pitcher of water in. About an hour later, you can have 1 or 2 or 3 gallons, depending on the size of unit that you buy. Then as the public started getting more and more concerned about city governments putting in fluoride or chlorine or chloramine, Berkey developed filters to take those elements out so that it's still, all the minerals are still in the water, no contaminants, no pollutants, and no chemicals. So we started with that. We thought this is a layup. People love them. Let's do that. Secondly, this idea of a single line carbon block filter that you could install yourself under your sink. If you look at the filters that go in your fridge, or in some cases, stuff that's already under your sink, it's either really high quality systems, like Culligan has a reverse osmosis system that's fantastic. It basically strips the water down to just H2O, which a lot of people aren't used to drinking.
Or tasting. Right.
There's a lot of folks that may not be able to afford that. So we came up with a really cool product called the MaxFlow by another company in America. They make it here. You know where the carbon comes from. gets the water to 99.99. You put it underneath your sink. You don't need a plumber. That was a big breakthrough. Sometimes these expensive systems, you got to hire a plumber to put these things in. Those are expensive too. And then the Grail, this where you're literally bottling your water one bottle at a time. But as it relates to launching something like this in Tulsa, I had multiple friends try to dissuade me from doing it. And this is probably the most important thing I could tell you. From a political standpoint, you look at Oklahoma and they say, you know, every county voted for Trump. You guys are so conservative. It's not progressive. Why in the world would you launch a company like this in Oklahoma? What I have found is this issue applies to everybody. So if you come in our shop, the first thing you see on our door, it says bottles for tree huggers and right wingers, cheapskates, science geeks, Jesus freaks, you know, hipsters, hippies, rockers, everybody. This affects everybody. And it's amazing that I've never been in a single argument in the last 6 months where somebody's come in and taken issue with our approach. It's always about how in the world can we get rid of less waste? How can we provide more stewardship? And so it's most encouraging to me that in a city that I believe is very forward-thinking, certainly our new mayor and a lot of the folks that are coming into leadership roles are more progressive. It's fascinating to me that we still have a problem where 80% of these plastic bottles in Tulsa are not recycled. So we have a great recycling program. We have good tap water. But we still have these issues of how in the world can we outthink this problem? Go back 70 years. Heck, go back. I'll be 50 in a couple of years. There's cigarette ads saying where doctors are recommending one cigarette over another. Fast forward, this is what we're going to be thinking and talking about, these plastic water bottles, where it's absolutely wrecking our environment and it's harmful to our health. But at this stage, people aren't really up in arms over it yet.
And Noah, what are some of the downsides of all this plastic? So is it that, how is it sullying our environment or how is it affecting our health?
First thing that I learned in California, other than just dealing with water shortages, droughts, and being a steward of the water that you're given, is the fact that when plastic gets into water, it never leaves. So I've heard several scientists refer to this quote of, you know, every piece of plastic that's ever been made still exists. And that's true. It just gets broken down, broken down, broken down. So what we are finding in water sources is microplastic. Microplastic is so small that it can't be separated from H2O. So when a fish or a bird or, you know, ingest it, it becomes part of that animal. So they do random samplings in grocery stores and restaurants, and they're finding microplastic in our food supply. We're literally eating this plastic. Most of us that are, you know, aware of the situation, we've seen hundreds of images of animals trapped in plastic, animals bursted, you know, basically that have died and you burst open full of plastic. They're eating the plastic. Humans are eating the plastic. So that was probably the first thing that really set me back with what would I do to keep plastic from our natural water sources. That's what we're really talking about is litter from ending up in the area lakes that we get our surface water, you know, pumped to the city of Tulsa. In a year's time, I've met two people, maybe three, that could tell me where Tulsa gets its water. So I knew it's a little bit like people talk about these foreign wars. They'll say, you know, I don't really think about what's going on in Afghanistan because I don't have a family member over there fighting. Someone else is fighting that. It's a lot like that in this issue with plastic that doesn't affect me. I know when I turn the water on, water comes out. I either like tap or I don't. If I don't, I drink plastic water. Stop talking. Stop listening. Now, this younger generation is absolutely listening, and they're trying to find practical ways to reverse that. But yeah, you don't have to see too many of these images of plastic completely wrecking our water systems, wrecking the wildlife, to think, gosh, this isn't good. We can do better than that.
I've read, too, that there are locations in our oceans that are just chock full of essentially plastic dumps, or where yeah. eddies and jet stream or
yes.
types of things have collect, you know, plastic collects essentially
yes,
because it doesn't break down.
That's right. They call them gyres, and there's five locations in the world's oceans where you've got these currents, these huge circular currents, and people talk about, you know, the plastic island the size of Texas and things like that. The reality is that based on research, there will be more pieces of plastic in the ocean than wildlife. The island that you're referring to that's got a lot of attention, I think they found 30 to 40 million pieces of plastic on this island in the middle of the Pacific, and that's surface area. They believe that there's that much plastic or more beneath the sand. So the issue of plastic going into creeks goes to rivers, rivers go to oceans. I mean, literally, the plastic that we pull from the banks of the Arkansas are heading to the Gulf Coast, are heading to the Atlantic. It's mind-boggling that such a minor thing, a Cheeto bag, a plastic water bottle, could have a life for hundreds and hundreds of years and ultimately have this, you know, carnage downstream. So with this next generation, in our terms of messaging, we're not shaming people. We're not trying to scare people. We're telling them the facts. The facts are you don't need to buy any more plastic. Recycling is not the answer. If you have stuff to recycle, recycle. Tulsa's got a great program. You don't need to recycle these plastic bottles because you don't need to buy them. Bottle your own water. And then really you look upstream and downstream. There's some really cool companies doing similar things. There's a company based in the UK that just opened a store in Tulsa at Woodland Hills Mall. And these guys are essentially getting rid of plastic packaged soap, shampoo, you know, things like that. When you think downstream from us, you look at straws, 500 million plastic straws a day are disposed of in the United States.
So that's like almost two for every person in the U.S. basically. Or
500 million straws a day. So my kids were going through 100 a month. It took me about a month to get them to convert to stainless steel straws or glass straws. But that little baby thing, these are these seemingly insignificant decisions that you make that have this ripple effect, and then you've got a generation that, you know, would feel stupid taking a straw from a waitress or waiter or a styrofoam cup for a to-go cup. That's going to take time, but that's why I'm investing so much time and energy in that 18 to 24 demographic where they're much more likely to adopt this way of thinking and then spread it when they, you know, wherever they go.
So along those lines, in the last couple of weeks here, we've heard of a big business news story, which is Amazon, the behemoth web and everything company, has bought Whole Foods.
Right.
And so I've heard various things from people suggesting that their strategy certainly is to go more into the food business. But I think there's some concern that this is going to, I mean, Amazon is a giant packager, right? They ship stuff.
That's right.
What do you see going forward as far as food distribution in an Amazon-dominated world?
I'm like everybody. I usually start these conversations by telling everyone I'm a hypocrite. I put fossil fuels in my car. I use an air conditioner. I buy stuff from Amazon. I'm still trying to leave the planet a little bit better than I found it. And so when I think about Amazon or Starbucks or whatever, a lot of these companies start out great, and then they get so big and you start losing control of quality, and then next thing you know, you start having a whole myriad of new problems that you hadn't thought of before. I don't really have an opinion on the acquisition of Whole Foods, but I will tell you this. Many people are concerned about the idea of this kind of proliferation of packaged foods. What I love and what is so pure and simple to me is the slow food movement that started in Italy in the 80s. And I just wrote a piece for Edible Tulsa that's coming out here in about a month, I guess, about slow water. But the principle is that food that you grow close to you is the healthiest, has the most nutrients, it's the best food for you. And so I think people are discouraged that Whole Foods started out, you know, in that philosophy and then became bigger, 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 started to feel like Walmart, and now you have Amazon competing with Walmart. It's not a stretch to think that Whole Foods could end up turning into unnecessary plastic packaged products and food. That would be discouraging. On the flip side, to Amazon's credit, Bezos, who's not to say that he doesn't bring innovation in to say, look, maybe there's a way to innovate the way that we help local growers get food to market faster. He's getting a lot of pressure from activists like Alice Waters and others to try to influence him. The fact of the matter is I'm trying to influence my kids. I'm trying to influence my friends and family. Slow food, slow water. The best things that we have are right around us. So you start there, and then you hope that if society, in fact, adopts this way of thinking, hopefully they can change the culture at these big companies like Amazon.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. My guest today is Noah Roberts, founder and owner of the Water Company that is in the Boxyard in Tulsa. We're talking about conservation. We're talking about the excessive use of plastic in our society and the fact that you can get, you know, city water, which is just as good or better than bottled water in many cases, or you can filter it on your own. Noah, I wanted to ask you a little bit about your background prior to the Water Company. You have had some experience with other startups. There's one in particular, I guess, I'm interested in that you spent a number of years working. Help me out. Ice Dot. Tell us about Ice Dot.
So, yeah, I've had a pretty colorful career. My wife at the time and I both worked for Apple right out of college. It was an incredible experience. So much of my success and opportunities really came from this culture of anything's possible, design and develop beautiful things that people want and use.
Did you work in design at Apple?
I did not. I was a grunt in a really cool program called the Apple Assurance Program. The very first PowerBook, the first laptop that Apple made, it was pretty cool. It had this huge rollerball. I don't know if you remember that.
I look back at it,
it's kind of ridiculous. Yeah. But I'd been on an Apple since I was 9. My dad gave me an Apple II. And anyway, I was already kind of a huge Apple geek. But when they designed that PowerBook, they also designed a customer service plan that said, look, if it breaks, mail it to us. We'll fix it and repair it in 3 days. And, you know, in 1991, that was pretty absurd. And they did it. And so just being in that environment, I learned so much. But yeah, from there, I managed and started several startups, managed early stage ventures. But yeah, iStot is still going today. It started out with a few doctors from St. John's Health System, Mike Maxwell and John Cox. And the idea was to basically create healthcare access for everybody through the internet. We really did some innovative things. It was a great experience. We literally competed with Google Health, Microsoft Health Vault. Steve Cases, the guy who started Amazon, had a Revolution Health.
AOL.
AOL. You know, a couple knuckleheads from Oklahoma and a few physicians. And but we built a really cool product. That product evolved. Healthcare was such a tough industry to crack into. The idea that you could use online apps, just like you do for online banking and airfare, that you could connect with your doctor. We proved that it worked. The doctors loved it. The patients loved it. The industry, the insurance companies, were not ready for that kind of access. And so there's a myriad of companies like ours that were even better that flat out didn't make it. But the testament to really that company that started as DocVia is over 10 years' time, we ended up raising over $10 million in Oklahoma. My colleague, who's now CEO, Chris Sentafer, one of the guys that helped start Tulsa Tough, was able to pivot the company and say, look, man, if healthcare is not ready, I think sports, outdoor cycling, climbing, I think they are, and we could adapt this technology for crash sensors. So we looked at all kinds of industries, but Chris really took it in a new direction. And over time, I believe that the technology that we created and really the way that Chris narrowed that focus of that company, that product could end up going worldwide through smart helmets and other wearable devices. So I'm still very excited to see what Chris does with that company.
So it's probably worth saying that ICE dot, in this reference, ICE is an acronym for in case of emergency.
That was right.
So
in case of emergency.
Okay, so smart helmets, give us the story there.
It literally started with the American Ambulance Association, a partnership that we formed with them because one of our employees, her family member, had a heart attack. They called EMSA and the paramedics on the scene, and the guy can't talk, and no one in the family knows what meds he's on, what allergies he had. He had no way of communicating. They were literally writing stuff on a napkin. And we thought, surely there's got to be some secure way for people to communicate during an emergency. So we launched a service called Invisible Bracelet that you could use a PIN number on a bracelet or your license or something. A medic could pull it up and see your age, sex, allergies, medications that you're on. And we took that to the American Ambulance Association. They actually trained thousands of paramedics around the country. Again, it really came to a hard stop when you realize that really large healthcare systems, health insurance companies were not convinced or not willing to get behind this idea that consumers could own and control their own health information. So we had pilots going with some really interesting companies like BMW, the Olympic Committee in Brazil, the International Olympic Committee, a lot of people looking at what could happen if we use the internet to communicate during medical emergencies. What Chris did with iStot was narrow it completely to something that he was passionate about, cycling. So you're either in a bicycle crash. If you can't turn that app off in time, it's going to notify your loved ones or be able to trigger an emergency call if you're out on a ride. And what seemed like a huge tangent ended up really being kind of the saving grace and hopefully what takes that company to the next level.
Wow. That's a really interesting transformation. I mean, and then you're right. I mean, I used to, as a physician, I looked at Google Health and Microsoft Vault. These are products that are really, Google Health was killed off by Google, and then Microsoft
Correct.
Vault, I think there's still a sort of a grandfathered version, or is it gone
right,
altogether?
Right, but they essentially killed it too.
Yeah.
Everybody stopped pursuing that. And so as a self-funded venture, we just could not sustain ourselves. But really, to Chris's credit, and really Peter Drucker talked about this 50 years ago. A guy comes up with a tool for fixing tires, and then he goes out of business, but they use it in the dental industry and make $1 billion. What started out as health access for all, it may end up creating an international standard for smart helmets. So the net result is people get better health care in emergencies, and hopefully you save some lives. That's why we started it, and I'm really excited to see what Chris does with it.
Well, we're almost out of time, but let's circle back from into the water company. So one of the surprises, did you open in 2017 or just late 2016?
I started working on it in 2015, and we opened our doors on January 6th of 2017.
And as I understood, there was an article about you in the Tulsa World. You're already turning a profit.
That's right. So when John Klein asked me, he's like, "You look surprised." And I'm like, "Yeah, of course I am, because when you do a startup, I mean, you build these pro formas and you always have your kind of go-to-hell scenario of I have to outlast all these problems." And we did not experience all of the setbacks that I thought we would have. So now, as lights are turning green, you're flooring it. So we're pursuing all kinds of interesting things. OU Tulsa was really the first institutional, which you're affiliated with, obviously, and unrelated to you, called us and said, "We love what you're doing. They've already put 3 of these drinking systems in. We're trying to become approved vendors for Tulsa Public Schools, parks, large employers. Essentially, we want their employees to be able to buy bottles essentially at wholesale and then put these drinking systems in so they can say, look, we're not buying plastic water bottles." So we're pedal to the metal right now in Tulsa, and then we're getting extraordinary feedback from college towns in this region saying, "Look, when are you guys coming to our town?"
That's
so
great.
We're working on some really innovative programs to get this out quickly, and I'm definitely happy with the early success.
Well, Noah Roberts is founder and owner of The Water Company. It's a small storefront that is in the Box Yard in Tulsa at 3rd and Frankfort. And he was our guest today on Medical Monday on Studio Tulsa. Noah Roberts, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, that's our show for this Medical Monday. Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of KWGS or the University of Tulsa. If you've missed any of our shows, you can always stream them online anytime on a smartphone, tablet, or computer just by going to our website, studiotulsa.org. For Studio Tulsa, I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. Thanks for listening.